Okay, we're going to continue in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud Aleph. We just finished Perek Yud, and we spoke about the tznius of Shaul, which he inherited from his great-great-grandmother, Rochel. And we spent a lot of time explaining what is that idea of tznius. And probably, we ran out of time last week. But there's, you hear this amazing story about Rochel, how she doesn't tell about that she gave over the signs to Leah in a way that Leah never really understood the great chesed that Rochel did for her. So you look at such an act and you figure, wow, that's great for those days. So I just want to end off with an amazing story of a more contemporary nature. There was the wife relates the story. So she gets married, gets engaged, and the custom of the family of the husband she was married to is that the grandmother would give a ring to the kalas, the engagement ring. So, indeed, with great fanfare, the grandmother purchases a wedding ring, and the kala gets the wedding ring. Now, the wedding ring was a little bit loose, just a touch loose. And from what I understand, women get a little bit anxious when you have a loose wedding ring, because it would be a pretty bad thing if you'd lose that wedding ring. So, anyway, they get married. Sheva brachas, and the last day of the Sheva brachas, the husband mentions to the wife, you know, where's the wedding ring, the engagement ring, and the wife looks, it's not on her finger, it's not anywhere nearby, and it appears that she lost the wedding ring. She lost the wedding ring. So this caused a major hoopla in the family, and everybody, as much as they said that they forgave the daughter-in-law that she lost this ring that the grandmother bought, and then she subsequently finds out how much the mother-in-law paid for it. In those days, it was like $5,000, and she was made to feel really inept because of that, although they said they forgave her, but they'd always would throw in these kinds of lines like, you know, maybe your husband should take this thing just to make sure it doesn't get lost and things like this. So it really got to a point where they were needling her beyond it, and it caused major Shalom Bayis problems, to put it mildly. So then a number of months passed, and then it came to a yontif, I believe it was Shavuos, I don't remember exactly. And one day the husband comes to the wife, and he now is putting on his yontif outfit that he hadn't worn since the wedding. And all of a sudden, he notices, he found the ring. He found the ring. Must be that when she washed her hands once, she told him to hold the ring. And he was the one that accused her, and everyone accused her of having lost the ring. So now, it's like Hashem picked her up from the garbage cans, and all of a sudden she became the favorite daughter-in-law, who now they felt so bad that they had misjudged her and this and that, and they always treated her so nicely. How could they have suspected her? And that was the boneheaded son who lost the ring and this, the whole thing. So fine. So this goes on for many, many years, and the story is forgotten, and Shalom al Yisrael, she has the ring. And now, quite often, the wife, whenever there'd be something very important that had to be done and you had to be sure not to lose anything, she'd always remind the husband how much that he lost the ring or misplaced the ring and this and this. This goes on, I don't remember exactly, for at least, I think, like about 15 years. The story was totally forgotten, 15 years. But needling him, she always remembered. So after 15 years, and by then the grandmother had gone on to the next world, and as women are, they tend to want to maybe freshen up their jewelry. So after 15 years, she figured, you know, get new style ring. So she goes to the jeweler that was the jeweler that the grandmother always went to. Goes to the jeweler and says, you know, I'd like to reappraise this jewelry and see what I could get for it and what I get different jewelry, this and that. Goes to the jeweler, and the jeweler says, very nice ring, I can appraise it for you, but one thing I tell you, your grandmother, your husband's grandmother did not buy the ring here. He says, how could it be? He says, listen, I know what I sold, I know what I did, and this is not a ring that I sold her. So fine. So she says, anyway, so will you still appraise it? Yes, he appraises it, this and that, and fine and everything, and good. Anyway, that evening, the wife tells the husband about what happened in the jewelry store. And she says how the ring was, she went to the jeweler and says it didn't come from the grandmother. So the husband says, oh, it's a big deal. So you don't think it's odd that she didn't go to the regular jeweler to buy this ring? So the husband says, no, it's not odd. It's probably whatever. Maybe it didn't work out. Maybe the jeweler's out of town. She's got a different jeweler. So I said, oh, you were so clever, my dear husband, but you slipped up a little on this one. He says, what are you talking about? He says, well, you know, I went back to find the piece of paper that says the value of the ring. What do you call it?
The appraisal sheet.
And the appraisal sheet on this thing was dated 4 months after our wedding. So he said, sure, you never thought I would find out that you bought a different wedding ring. In other words, what happened was the grandmother bought the ring by this guy. The husband indeed, the wife indeed lost it. And 4 months later, the husband saw how much the wife was suffering from her family, that the husband feigned the whole thing, that he was the one who lost the ring. And he went to a different jeweler to buy the ring. And only by her checking the date of the appraisal, which was 4 months after the wedding, means it could not be the ring that the grandmother gave. And the wife said, and that probably cost you a lot of money that you didn't have. The husband said, yes. And the husband says, well, now that you know what happened, the husband starts telling how he has to do all these side jobs to make another $5,000-$6,000 that they didn't have. And the wife never knew the whole time. And again, the whole time, everyone makes him look like the schlemazel. He would be the one to receive all the insults from the whole family and from his wife for 15 years and always be made look as not such a responsible guy. And meanwhile, he's the one who bought the ring. He's the one who had to work extra to make the ring. And had the wife not decided to get a new ring, the wife would never have known the chesed that the husband did for her throughout their marriage. So you don't have to just be Rachel Imenu to do such a thing. This is the idea of tznius. Tznius means when you do something that's incredibly amazing and nobody needs to know except Hashem. And that's what it means. Hatznei alecha sim Hashem alekecha. You walk humbly, modestly with Hashem. So when you do a mitzvah, really the only one who ever needs to know anything, the only reason to do anything in this world is to do it for Hashem. And that's what Rachel, she told Leah, the simanim, in a way that Rachel didn't even know that she wasn't the favorite wife. And therefore she has a descendant, Shaul, who acts the same way. Where Shaul is saying that he's like hiding. He's not even interested in becoming the king. And when the uncle says, did you, what happened? He says, doesn't say anything. Doesn't say anything to the uncle. And as you see, you know, a lot of times that's important because had he told the uncle what happened, it would have blown the whole cover for Shmuel and the whole choosing of the king would have been cast in doubt. So you see how difficult it is to be able to hide a secret, especially when you are the hero of the story. And that's what tznius really is, that nobody needs to know about the kindnesses that you do. And we'll see this goes hand in hand with a few other themes that we've been learning in the Parsha classes. It seems to all be overlapping. We're learning about Yosef and the descendants of Yosef and Rachel and all these things and how Amalek falls into the hands of the descendants of Rachel. it all fits into the same pattern, but it starts with the person who's not looking for any kavod, and he does all those things just for himself. So I figured this story was a good way of starting, because we kind of feel, well, you know, Rachel could do such things. That she was one of the matriarchs, but a regular person couldn't do such a thing. So I'm just trying to show that regular people can do these things, and that's what we're supposed to learn from these stories, that we have to behave in such a fashion. Okay, let us now continue. Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Aleph. And now we get the first test. Vayal Nochash Ha'amoni. Okay, so remember, at this point, after the picking of the king, Shaul goes back home. He goes back to Giva with the few supporters that he had. Most people didn't think he was that great. The B'nai Belial insulted him. They wouldn't give him any gifts. If you were gone, he was quiet. He was quiet. It wasn't a big deal. So, and again, you see the same idea. Like, Shaul didn't take it personally. A modest person doesn't take these things personally. If you're only doing things for Hashem. And he understood. It's not they don't like him. It's they don't like what he represents. He represents the way a king should be, the way Shmuel wanted a king, not the way the people wanted. So in a sense, he doesn't take it personally. So, Vayal Nochash Amoni Vayichan Al Yovesh Gilad. And Nochash the Amoni, this was a king, an Ammonite king, a very wicked man. Vayichan Al Yovesh Gilad. And he camps out against Yovesh Gilad. Yovesh Gilad is on the other side of the Jordan River. And he wants to camp to wage war with them and to destroy them. So all the people of Yavesh Gilad said to Nochash, cross lano bris v'navdecho, make a covenant with us and we will serve you. We'll subjugate ourselves to you. Don't go to battle. Let's make a covenant. So the question is, why did Nochash want to start up in general? And B, why was specifically the people of Yavesh Gilad? So the Malbim explains as follows. He says, Yavesh, Nochash found out the fact that the Jews had anointed a king. So he is ready testing the waters. What's going to be with this new Jewish king? Is there really going to be, is there a new renaissance in the Jewish people? Are they going to be someone to reckon with? And it could be as well if they were really monitoring the situation well and realizing that Shmuel, remember, things were quiet while Shmuel was the leader because they knew this was the man of God and what they did with the Plishtim and all that. It seems the Jews had relative quiet because Shmuel was a tremendously holy person. There were a lot of Nevi'im around. The Jews are on a high spiritual level, and the nations of the world are afraid to attack the Jews when they realize that they're on that level. Could very well be he understood when the Jews wanted a regular king, he could, you know, understand there was perhaps a spiritual dissent, and the Jews would become more vulnerable. And there he's testing out this new king and wants to draw them into war to see what kind of courage is this king going to have and what will the Jews do now that they're under a king. So that's point number one. But point number two, why did he go to Yavesh Gilad? What's so special about Yavesh Gilad? Well, what happened? We've got to go back to that story of Pelegesh Begiva again. It always comes back to us throughout this story. Remember, Shaul is from Binyamin. What happened to the people of Binyamin? They got wiped out big time. And more than that, the Jews said they will not intermarry with the tribe of Binyamin. So how did they eventually get any wives? So if you recall, there was one group of people who did not go to battle against Binyamin in the famous civil war of Pelegesh Begiva. And when the Jews incorrectly analyzed their situation at that time, and said, how could it befall us that tens of thousands of Jews died in this battle? What did we do wrong? So what did they incorrectly surmise? It must have been a group of Jews didn't go out to battle. And who was that group of Jews from what area? From Yavesh Gilad. And they're going to wipe out the people of Yavesh Gilad because they didn't go to battle. And then there were a lot of unmarried women from Yavesh Gilad that the tribe of Binyamin would be able to marry. So what do you have? And remember now, the men of Yavesh Gilad got wiped out. There were young maidens from Yavesh Gilad. The Binyamites marry them. So where do you think they're going to live? Not going to live in Binyamin. They're going to live in Yavesh Gilad. They already got the homes. Everything's there. And the girls are there. So there was a lot of Binyamites living in Yavesh Gila. So therefore, he is now going up against the family of the king, to like right in their face. You got a king from Binyamin, I'm going to go up against Mishpacha from his, Mishpacha, and I'm going to show that I don't even care about him and his family and any of that, and I'm going to start up with you guys. So that's why he is involved. And you'll see there's a lot of parallels to the Pelegish Begiva story over here, and perhaps a tikkun, a correction for the flaws that occurred over there. So Pasuk Beis, so they want to make peace with him. So what's his response? Vayomer lehem Nachash Amoni. So Nachash responds and says, Bezos echros lachem. Under this condition, I'll make a covenant with you. Very simple covenant. Bin kor lachem kol ein yamin. I will poke out every one of your right eyes. You want to make a covenant? I'll blind every one of you in your right eye. Okay? V'samti acher po'al kol Yisrael. And I will make a shame upon you for the entire Jewish people by doing this. So, Malbim explains what's going on over here. So usually when a covenant is made, when you make a covenant, a non-aggression treaty, you're doing it where both sides seem to benefit from such a pact. We find in earlier covenants made with Avram and Yitzchak, with Avimelech and those people, where he says, listen, we're not going to do any bad to you, you're not going to do any bad to us. In lieu of the fact that we did kindnesses to you, Avraham, you should be kind to us. So in other words, you make usually a peace treaty as if, you know, each side feels there's something to be gained by the peace treaty, and that is having peace that you might not otherwise have, and instead of losing many lives, you make a peace treaty. Fine. But that's only possible if the ones you make a peace treaty with have the strength and the power to fight and hurt you. So therefore you're willing to make a peace treaty. But what are you going to do if there are people who are not strong at all, and you want to destroy them, and the weak people say, let's make a peace treaty. He says, what do I need to make a peace treaty with you? I can wipe you out. So therefore he kind of mocks them. He says, okay, you want to have a peace treaty? I don't need no peace treaty from you guys. I'll poke all your right eyes out. That's the kind of peace treaty we'll make. And that will become an embarrassment and a shame for all the Jewish people. Why? Because, obviously, how would all the Jews just sit back and watch this happen? So if I'm able to get all you to agree that I'll poke your eyes out, that is as if I was victorious over the entire Jewish people. And in that way, I have what to gain by making a peace treaty with you. I'll make a peace treaty if I can poke out all your eyes. And which obviously means the entire Jewish people are aware that a great calamity is happening. Nobody's getting up to help you. You have this king who's sitting by watching the sheep in his fields in Giva, totally inept to help out. And this will become the biggest bizoyan, the biggest embarrassment to the Jewish people that they allowed such an atrocity to happen and nobody went and did anything to stop them. So that is the way the Malbim explains what the intentions of this fellow were. As well, Rashi brings down from Chazal one other interpretation. Brings down from a Medrash that says, bring me your Sefer Torahs that was given with a right hand. Hashem says, Hashem gave it, so to speak, with a right hand, and I'll burn it. And why did he want to burn the Torah? What do you have against the Torah? Besides that, in general, it's Judaism. But what is it? So Medrash brings down, what does it say in the Torah? That Ammonites and Moabites are not allowed to enter the congregation of Israel. Oh, you discriminate against Ammonites. I'm from Ammon. I'm going to burn your Sefer Torah. So, you know, either pshat is an acceptable pshat in terms of it being an embarrassment for the Jewish people. Certainly it's a great shame if they would burn a Sefer Torah or pluck out the eyes of a bunch of Jews and nobody there to stop them. So either way, this would have accomplished the goals that Nachash wanted. And that would give an overall weakness to the new kingdom that was inaugurated. So Pasuk Gimel. Vayomer lev zikne Yavesh. So the elders of Yavesh responded to him and says, Heref. Heref means like, let us alone. An expression of rifayon. To leave us be for a little while. Shiva Shemr 7 days. V'nishlecho malachim b'chol gvul Yisrael. We'll send messengers throughout the boundaries of Israel to see if anybody's going to help us. V'imein Mashiach, son, if nobody helps us, then v'yatzor alech, we'll go out to you and you will pluck our eyes out. So now the question is, why is Nachash willing to wait a week? Well, if you understand what his motivations are, it becomes very clear. Remember, did he just want to wipe out Yavish Gil? What's Yavish Gil? It's a very puny area. Doesn't have a lot of Jews over there. What's the big deal just to kill a couple of Jews? But the point was, you want to be able to embarrass all the Jewish people. So how are you going to be able to embarrass all the Jewish people? How are you going to embarrass the king? You give us enough time that we could organize troops if we wanted to. So if you could say, listen, I gave him a whole week. Word spread all around. They had lots of time to gather their troops together. If they wanted to fight me, they could have fought me. So I'll give you a week. What do I care? And he's pretty confident that the Jews are not going to be able to come up with the muscle to be able to go up against him. And that's exactly what he wants. That's Malva Mislushitoso, saying, I want to prove how inept you guys are. I'll give you a week, whatever you want. And you come back in a week with nothing, you'll just prove my point. That's how the Malbim learns it. The Ralbag explains, really the same idea almost, where he says he agrees to this, because he really did want to fight against the Jewish people. He wanted to conquer the entire Eretz Yisrael. That was his main goal, not just to embarrass them. Really, you could learn both pshatim together. Either way would be an embarrassment. But he wants to suck them into a war, let them fight. And this way, you know, instead of just knocking off Yavish Gilad and then going to another place and another place. It's going to be a long, protracted war. Let's get the whole Jewish people together here. We'll have one war. Boom, we'll knock you guys out. And we'll control Eretz Yisrael after one war. Either way, he wanted to show dominance over the Jews. So you can combine the Malbim shot and the Ralbag's shot. It fits in very nicely. Either I'm going to embarrass you guys because you're chicken out, you're not going to fight, which is enough of an embarrassment. And if you're afraid to fight me, I have control over you anyway. And you know, what wicked non-Jewish king isn't happy to fight a war anyway? Right? We'll have a war, and he's pretty confident he's going to win the war, and we'll control you anyway. We'll do it in one battle, finished. Either way, within a short period of time, I'll have mastery over the Jews in Eretz Yisrael. See, either way, so what does he have to lose by waiting the week? Pasuk Dalet. Pasuk Dalet. Vayavoa malachim givas shaul. So messengers come to givas shaul, the hill of shaul. That's where shaul lived. Vayidabru advarim beoznayam, and they speak these words in the ears of the people. And everybody raised their voices and they cried. So he went to Givas Shaul. The messengers went to Givas Shaul because that's where the king is. So you go where the king is first. Pasuk Hey, v'nei Shaul bo acharei habokar min asada. Look at this. Shaul hears the crying and he's coming with the cattle from the field. This was the guy who was anointed to be the king. What did he do? He goes back to his farm in Crawford. Goes back. He was. What are you talking about? He was made the king in front of all the Jews. Shmuel took him as, here is your king. Right? And some people honor him. Then there were those Anshib Liyal who didn't honor him. Right? But he was the anointed king. He was the king. Shmuel told all the Jews, here is your king. So he went back to his ranch in Crawford, Texas, to just take care of his cattle, because you know the Jews don't really want me to be their king. Again, you see how humble he is. You want me to be the king? I won't be the king. I didn't ask for this. So he's coming back with his cows. He's coming back from herding them, whatever. And he finds out what's going on. Vayomer Shaul, and Shaul says, Malom, what's with the people? Kiyivku, that they're crying like this. Vayisaprulo, as Divrayanche Yavesh. So they told over the words of the people from Yavesh. They told them what happened. Pasuk Vav, Vatitzlach ruach Elokim al Shaul, kishamo es advar me'ela vayichar apamov. So a spirit of Hashem, titzlach, came over him. A spirit of Hashem came over. Really the word titzlach, tzalach, means to split things. And in this context over here, and it's really where the word hatzlacha comes from. Hatzlacha, which we explained, it means success, means you're able to split through all barriers. Usually to be successful, you have to overcome barriers. Something in the way, you have to split through it. You have to cut through it. That's how success happens. So, and that's how Mitzudis gives us the regular explanation in the context of the pasuk here, in terms of Atislach, where a wave of Hashem's spirit comes over. He says, "Over lav ruach gadol levav ugro mi Hashem." A great spirit of courage and strength comes over him, and he gets very angry at this Nachash fellow. A chutzpah, he's insulting the Jewish people. And the Malbim explains very nicely. He says, even philosophers, will agree to this point, that a weak type of person, when he hears that an atrocity has happened against his people, he'll be very sad. That's about it. But a warrior, he gets angry to take revenge. And therefore he's saying the spirit of Hashem came over him was the spirit of Gvura, and he got angry in a good way. It's a good anger. It's an anger for the sake of Shem Shemayim. How could somebody want to go and shame and insult the Jewish people, which really, by association, is a shame against the Kaddish Baruch Hu? So in other words, to take up the cause for Hashem, he got angry for the right reason, and now he's going to do something about this. So Pasuk Zayin, now listen well, see if you see any parallels. Vayikach tzemed bakar, he takes a pair of ox, of cattle, vayinatcheu, and he cuts them up into pieces. Vayishalach b'chol gvul Yisrael, he sends them via courier to all the borders of Israel, b'yad ha-malachim, in the hands of these messengers, lemor saying, asher eneni yotzeach arei Shaul v'acharei Shmuel, whoever doesn't go after Shaul and after Shmuel, see, he keeps saying it's not just after me, but it's after Shmuel, because Shmuel was the one who anointed me. Whoever doesn't go after, you see this little bit of chopped up meat over here? Ko yesel of karo. This is what we'll do to all your cattle. If you're saying, I don't want to bother with Yavish Gil, it's not my problem. I got my ranch to look after. He says, well, you see how we chopped up these two oxen? So we're going to chop up your cattle to bits if you don't come to battle. He really threatens them, like, you're going to get it. Vayipol pachad Hashem alam, and a fear of Hashem came over the people. Vayetsu ke'ish echod. And they all came out to battle like one man. Okay, where did we have a similar story? Started Pelegesh Begiva. Exactly. What did that guy do when they raped and murdered his Pelegesh, his concubine? He chopped her up into bits and sent them throughout the realm. And says, we gotta all go to battle because you have to take up the cause of morality over here. And they're both from Shevet Binyamin. Right? It's interesting that who were the ones who suffered the most from this original cutting up of the bits of the flesh? It was Shevet Binyamin. They got wiped out. In other words, Shevet Binyamin learned the lesson more than anyone else about how important it is and what can happen when the Jews are unified. When the Jews are unified, look what they do. They wiped out a whole tribe of Israel nearly. Not bad. So now they were the ones who almost got wiped out. So they were on the suffering end of Jewish unity. They understand the power and the wrath of Jewish unity. And even after they lost the first couple battles, they didn't stop. And they went till they finally took care of everybody from Binyamin. So they understood that we can, you can garner up all the troops if they really want to, they can. So it's interesting, even though the events of Pelegesh Begiva really was a cataclysmic event, and it was this horrific, the civil war that happened amongst the Jewish people, but even with all the bad, there was that little silver lining showing that if the Jews really want to, they are capable of getting together. It's just got to be a cause that speaks to their heart. And now Shaul figures, well, this is really going to be the test. It's not like they never did it before. They did do it before. Maybe not for the best of reasons, whatever, but they were able to get together. Let's say they get together again. And now under the leadership of Shaul and Shmuel, now it's done under Torah guidance. Pelegesh Begiva was not done under Torah guidance. It really wasn't a Shofet per se who was running the show over there. So now you're going to do it. Are you going to get together under the direction of the king who was anointed by Shmuel, who is saying you're going to follow what Hashem wants in terms of this leader or not? That was the test. And that's how the Malbim explains why he cuts up the cattle like that. And he says that he gave them a message to say like this. Just so we know, you have an animal. An animal's alive. But the animal cannot be alive if you chop up the animal to bits. Even though you've got all the animals there. You've got every pound. You weigh an animal before it weighs alive. Okay, weighs how many? I don't know how many pounds an animal weighs. Right, a cow weighs. Now you chop them up into bits and put them on a scale. He weighs the same. Same amount of mass. But it ain't the same animal. Because the spirit has left the animal. The life force has left the animal. So he says the same thing. Just like there's no life force in an animal when it's separated and not unified. Same thing with the Jewish people. The Jewish people cannot really be vibrant alive if we're not connected as one. If we're not unified to help each other, we're like a dead carcass. And we'll be treated like a dead carcass. So he says, and if you are going to be that way, then mita keneged mita, measure for measure. I'm going to go and I'm going to make sure to chop up all your animals. You'll have no cows at all. So they got the mussar from him and they understood that they have to act as one, and indeed they were able to get together over here. Pasuk Ches. Vayifkedeim bevozek. So now the Jews all gather in a place called Bezek. And they were counted. He counted them in Bezek. And within a week's time, let's see how many Jews were able to get together. Vayu b'nei Yisrael shalosh meos elef. The Jewish people brought together 300,000 soldiers. And on top of that, the Ish Yehuda shloshim elef. And the tribe of Yehuda, which was Shaul's tribe, more than that, was not Shaul's tribe, but it was the tribe that really should have been in line for kingship. And we'll see in a minute again why we're going to mention Yehuda. So it's interesting. Yehuda could have said, what's this business? Shaul's the king. He's from Binyamin. King's supposed to come from Yehuda. We know that tradition from Yaakov already. And there could have been a lot of resentment and said, listen, you guys can fight. We ain't involved in this battle. So the Navi's going out of his way to say, even the tribe of Yehuda, who would have normally felt resentment to what was going on and felt slight and said, we're not going to be involved in this battle. They too brought 30,000 men to battle. So it shows that everybody was totally unified over here. Now, it's really, we'll be asking a lot to remember where we had Bezek before. We'll really be asking a lot because you'd have to be remembering over a year. But if you remember, in the beginning of Sefer Shoftim, right in the beginning of Sefer Shoftim, the first parak, okay, when the Jews, with the review, how the Jews have to conquer the land of Eretz Yisrael. So the Navi says to Yehuda, they say, who is going to attack the Canaanim first? So Hashem says it's going to be Yehuda. And Yehuda goes over to Shimon and says, listen, you're with me. And they go to battle and they fight the Canaani. And it says, Vayakum bebezek. And they destroy the Canaanis in a place called Bezek. Same place. And they find the leader of them who is Adoni Bezek. They find him there and they destroy them. And what did they do to Adoni Bezek when they caught him? Now you remember that. What did they do? They chopped off his thumbs and his toes. Remember? And why did? And then Adoni Bezek says, "Yeah, and that's what I did to the 70 kings of Canaan. I cut off their toes and their thumbs, right? To show, and I had them eating scraps under my table." Adoni Bezek was the master of Canaan. So the first battle is boom. They gave it to such a guy. So it's very interesting that in that there's a lot of parallels over here. And who did this? Yehuda. Yehuda went out to battle first, right? So you see, Yehuda was involved in this as well. And so this first battle is in Bezek as well. It's reenacting. The first battle of Shoftim was around the area of Bezek. And now the first battle of Amalek is in the area of Bezek. And it's interesting how Nachash kind of said, I'm going to poke your eyes out. The other guy was taking their thumbs. He's taking their eyes. A lot of similarities over there. So you can see it's an auspicious place. I'm sure there's more mystical ideas behind it that I'm not aware of. But that's where this battle is going to take place. And the Jews will be successful. We'll see in a minute. Now, what's also interesting, Rashi points out in Pasuk Ches, he at the end brings down this citation from Shoftim. But in the beginning, he says something else. That what is Bezek? Vayivkem be-Bezek. So in the city of Bezek. But also Bezek means pieces of pottery. Broken pieces of pottery. What does broken pieces of pottery have to do with anything over here? Zarif Gedei means, we know, the rabbis tell us, that when you count the Jews, you never count Jews directly. And we know that from the Machatzis HaShekel. You don't count Jews directly. What do? They gave a half shekel coin, and we count how many half shekel coins that they give, and then you know how many Jews that are there. So the same thing, how did they know there were 300,000 Jews and 30,000 from Yehuda? Is that everybody brought a little broken piece of pottery, and they counted up the little broken pieces of pottery. Others say it's a bezek is avonim, a little piece of rocks. Oh, they took a pebble, place they counted the pebbles over there. And we'll see later on, they do a similar thing. So they took a little piece of pottery or a little piece of stone, and they counted them all, just like the Machatzis HaShekel. And that's what they did over there. Very nice. Questions like, why mention that at this point? Like, why? It's a nice aside. It's a nice little point of information. But what's the Navi trying to explain over here? So both interpretations are correct. It was in the city of Bezek, and they did it in Bezek by counting the people in that way. So it's already time. Okay, we'll continue at this point. You can think about it. What would be the connection? And try to remember his shoal and his humility and things like that. See, what would that have to do with counting the people in a way that's indirectly? We'll pick up on that tomorrow, Mitzvah.